Willkommen zu der vierten Ausgabe von Helvetia, lass uns reden. Heute mit dem Jakob Kaidar, Botschafter von Israel, seit 5 Jahren schon in der Schweiz, aber langsam auf dem Weg zurück nach Israel. Willkommen, Herr Botschafter, Mr. Ambassador, very welcome. Zusammen mit dem André Silberschmidt, meinem Co-Host zum Podcast Helvetia, lass uns reden. I will now switch to English because, Jakob, we decided it's better to have this discussion, which we're very much looking forward to, in English. And a hearty welcome here in our circle of Strategie Dialog 21. To start, let me ask you a little bit a personal question. What will you miss most from Switzerland when you are back in Israel?
First of all, thank you very much for inviting me. I'm very honored to be part of your podcast, of your distinguished podcast. And I would like to say that I will miss Switzerland, but surely the people, especially in, I'm sorry if somebody is from another city, but in Bern, the people are very nice and kind. And I will miss, of course, the nature, the mountains, the lakes, the rivers, the green. And, but I hope to come back from time to time to visit.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. Going a bit more into our topic of today, which overall is innovation, we would like to talk about what can Switzerland learn from Israel, Israel being an innovative hub, being a tech, very tech-oriented and innovative country in the last several years. Bridging this question before, however, in an interview that you gave to a large newspaper recently, you mentioned in the end that when you go back to Israel, you will not only miss Switzerland, but you want to focus on working with children. Why children? What is important to you about working with children, Jakob?
Well, this I learned from my wife. I mean, she has been a teacher for so many years. I don't want to say how many. And we did a lot of projects. When I was ambassador to Kenya, projects in schools with children. And when I was working in our ministry in Jerusalem, in the Middle East department, we did a lot of educational projects for peace and coexistence with our neighbors, the Palestinians and Jordanians. And this is very close to my heart. And I think that looking back on those projects, I think that I was able with all my colleagues to make some difference. And I would like to do it also in the future.
Right. So I would see maybe 2 points we could take on based on your answer. So children are very open-minded. Children are very creative. Children are in their own way authentic and innovative. Do you think that our educational system in Switzerland, if you compare it to Israel, is fostering the ability later on when they become young adults and getting into their profession that they actually have learned to being innovative, or would you say there are differences between both countries?
I have to say that I'm not so knowledgeable about the Swiss educational system, but judging by the results, you are doing a very good job. I mean, you are an innovative country, you are a country of entrepreneurs, and you do quite a good job. I mean, you are leading in many ways an economy in Europe. Mm-hmm. So the result is not bad. But to talk about children in Israel and in Switzerland in general, without comparing, I think that one thing that we should foster is curiosity among children. Curiosity to science, to curiosity to innovation, curiosity to ask questions. Mm-hmm. And this is in our tradition in Israel, to ask questions, to argue. You see it in all aspects of life. Of course, when you read the newspapers, you see it in politics, but you see it in many, many aspects. And for sure in the business and the science and innovation.
You nicely presented me a book that you brought with you. It's called Startup Nation, the story of Israel's economic miracle. So Israel is a very young country. It's been founded in 1948. And Switzerland is a very old country in comparison. I mean, it goes back to 1291. Okay, we had then a renewal in 1848. Would you say that Israel, being a so-called startup nation, a young nation, actually helps and enhances this innovation spirit outside now of the question of fostering curiosity in children as a general distinctive characterization?
I think that Israel is a combination of old and young. I mean, the culture is very old. The nation, the people, have a very, very long history. And I think that maybe two of our reasons to be innovative, you can find them in our ancient history. I mean, for example, the Talmud, the interpretation of our Bible. This is a source of arguing, a source of learning, and a source of debating and asking questions. I mean, every small item there has been discussed and asked again and argued about. And also our long years of 2,000 years of diaspora taught us to be patient. And in research, you have to be very patient. And we have this kind of tradition of very patient research and innovation. And you have to be to adapt, because we are always a minority. Yeah. And then when we created our country, one of the things that we learned very quickly is that, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. And we have this Herausforderung, this challenges of security. And we had to find solutions. Mm-hmm. So this is a combination. And also, the country, as a young country, still had traditions of learning, of research from Jewish people from the past. And so it's a combination. Our universities, for example, started much, or some of them started much before the country.
Right.
I mean, the Hebrew University was created 100 years ago. And the Technion,
right, yeah,
which is equivalent of ETH, yeah, was also created about the same time.
So is it fair to say, and then I'd like to introduce Andri, looking at it more from the, let's say, the politician side, that you mentioned the diaspora, meaning you have an incredible network around the globe.
Yes.
I think that is unique, absolutely unique. Israel being founded only in 1948, but yet coming a long, long, long way. And then this diaspora having that incredible network.
Yes.
And, you know, literally the brain that is behind, I think, is something where we in Switzerland cannot really compete. We don't have that diaspora. We have Auslandschweizer, but it has a completely different background and yeah, situation. I really take that as an interesting aspect of this discussion. So, and Andy, how do you judge that? What is your take on what we just talked about?
So for me, it's very interesting to hear that you say it's like, it's very long time ago that you have this kind of curiosity and that you always want to innovate to change. So this is something I learned so far. What I'm interested in is that your government plays a very powerful role also when it comes to the Startup Nation. Do you think this is the only difference to the ecosystem in Switzerland, like when it comes to the general conditions of doing business? Or are there any other differences you think is we could learn from Israel? Because I think we will never have such a like strong military approach and security approach to foster our ecosystem. So this is something we just have different situations, but are there any other conditions you would like to mention?
Well, I think something, I'm not sure it's similar, but Probably, yes, that Israelis have a very, very strong and positive attitude towards technology, towards innovation. I mean, it's something that many Israelis think that their children should do, you know. And about the government, there might be a difference. I will tell you with a few words about what is the government role in creating this innovative ecosystem. You know, more than 20 years ago, the first venture capital fund in Israel was created by the government, because there was nobody else who was willing to do this kind of thing. And this opened the way. Yeah. So the government is an accelerator. Of course, nowadays, most of it is private. But this was very important. And then we have the Innovation Authority, the Israeli Innovation Authority. It acts, to my mind, it is acting a little bit differently from what you do here in Switzerland. It is a governmental authority, and they assist directly seed companies in the seed phase or startup companies. Not academic research, but in the phase of turning from academic research to business, to a private company. And they assist them in loans, in money, and they assist also in infrastructure. I mean, they give them a lot of facilities, a lot of for example, we have I just wrote it here. We have incubators that are funded by this authority, by the government, basically. Incubators with all kind of, and it's about 20 incubators spread all around the country for all kinds of innovative sectors. And they provide all the
So those are satellites by the government, these incubators that you are in Tel Aviv, you go there. I mean, Tel Aviv obviously is a very hot spot anyway, but...
But we try to do it in the periphery as well. I mean,
so
not
people can go to the periphery, and it's not only a centers, big city-based thing, but also in...
That's a professor with an idea, for example, that he has his idea on his laptop. Mm-hmm. And he wants to develop it into a company. So they give him the platform.
Right.
So the government's role is much stronger than just the military, right? Because what I thought before is that like the military is playing an important role, and there comes the connection to the startups. But I didn't know that the government in general is like also funding not just startups that are focusing on security, but also in other industries.
10 years ago, for example, more than 10 years ago, the government decided that smart mobility is a priority.
Right.
And they put, the seed money was about $50 million to try to move this industry to a few companies in this regard. And now that it has matured and it's privately owned, and there's a lot of private money, and now the government is looking at other areas, for example, artificial intelligence, to put money and that's something that apart from the military, of course, the military is a hub, is a kind of accelerator for a lot of technologies, a lot of innovations, to turn it to civilian use. And of course, the manpower that gets training in the military. My son, for example, is one.
So these topics, or the mega trends, like the mobility or what other you just mentioned, is there a certain process that the government follows, or is this part of the agenda? I mean, Netanyahu was now in office for, I think, 12 years. So, I mean, he has, his government is obviously responsible for quite a substantial amount of time of this innovation. And so did they have a specific agenda, or how do these topics come up? Or is it by chance, or can you give us some
input? It's not by chance. They have a committee. They have an expert committee. Mm-hmm. That they try to identify what is the next field of innovation that we should focus on, and what needs are there.
Okay.
And sometimes it's you know, there is the idea, but there is not still behind it, you don't have still the technology. And they have to develop it. Like, for example, in the smart mobility, it was Mobileye, for example, company. It was a professor, and he developed it, I think, in the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. And, I mean, he had the idea, but the technology was not yet there. So with government assistance, it was they helped it to develop.
But you do also follow a bit the concept, which we also have here, that the universities like the ETH or the EPFL in Lausanne, they have spin-offs. So there is this biotope of spin-offs or of research from the bigger universities. Yes. But then the government jumps in and underlies that with this push.
Certainly. Yeah. I think each big university mm-hmm. has this kind of what we call science park.
Right, right.
Of turning ideas into technologies, into companies.
What is the role of the banks in Israel there? I mean, in Switzerland, we do have banks that also participate, not always maybe in the best way, but they do participate in that. Do Israel banks do that
sure.
also?
Yes, very much so. Very much so. It's the banks, it's private venture capital funds, it's hedge funds, it's institutional right. Institutional funds that we have. But I have to say that a lot of the money comes from outside. Comes from big multinationals, including Swiss.
Yes.
Including Swiss.
So, Andri, shouldn't the public sector in Switzerland do more than up until now, if we hear this example by Israel?
It's very interesting. I was asking myself what would happen if I would hand in a motion asking for a state venture capital. And I think everyone, not everyone, but like 80% would say tax money should not play a role in venture because it's risk capital. But on the other hand, I have to say that supporting the ecosystem infrastructure is for sure a governmental role, I think. And this is perhaps something we should address more also with those hubs you mentioned in the periphery. I mean, we do have InnoSwiss with the like also an innovation agency. We have some cantonal initiatives, but I think we have to address more the infrastructure part, because I think the venture capital part is something that will not pass in Switzerland with taxpayers' money. So this is something I wanted to ask you, like, how do the Israeli people react when those investments fail? Because it's the government that invests, and I mean in venture or also when it invests in future mobility and perhaps they invest in the wrong companies. Is that not a topic then in the public?
So we think a bit differently. I mean, we think that exactly the government role is exactly to try and help the ideas in the phase when they are still risky, that nobody else would like to give money to or to spend because they might be risky. And this is the time. So the Innovation Authority, actually, they have, by the way, a MOU with your InnoSwiss. We signed, this is one of the things I'm very proud
recently,
of.
Recently, during your tenure.
During my term, they signed an MOU, and they learned from each other, of course. I mean, we have a lot to learn from Switzerland as well. And I just heard they have some joint activities coming soon, so we are very proud of it.
Great. Jobs, what do you think about these activities from the government in Israel?
You know, I think I see it both in two different ways. One, just before lunch, I had a meeting with a startup, which is here in Bern. And they are in visualizing area, And I asked him, I didn't mention your name, but I have a talk, and what is the biggest, let's say, stumbling block in Switzerland? There were two Americans, by the way, who have lived here for a long time, and they say, in Switzerland, we have a problem that people are not enough risk open. They are risk adverse. And there I see that the government cannot really help this, because this is a mindset, this is a cultural thing. And I do believe that Israel is in a different situation there. I mean, you have to fight every day a little bit to position yourself, to maintain the right of Israel, of being its own state. We don't have to do that, really. We have a very high wealth status, and we are a bit saturated. And I feel there is a difference in the setup. I think the government cannot do much there, really, except to promote that it pays off to be risky. So yes, in a second view, I do agree with you, Andri, that we need to have a certain infrastructure that maybe enhances the risk-taking to a degree, because the Swiss are not so risk-freudig, as we say. So I'm coming from that different angle. Nevertheless, I also believe, of course, in free entrepreneurship, and I would be hesitant to say the government in Switzerland has to play a too active role in that sense. I also have to say that in Switzerland we do have a very good situation with seeding money. That's not a problem for startups. But in the second phase, when it's entering its first round of commercialization, there we still have a lack of, let's say, support and also from the necessary funds that are not available. Once it's then up and running, then people jump on the boat.
I think in this regard, in the our innovation authority, when it puts money in those very early stage companies or ideas, some of them are risky. I mean, they lose money, but they don't do it just without thinking, without checking. I mean, they really do a very deep check of the idea of the company with other experts, but at the end of the day, from the companies that do make money, they get a return, of course.
Jobs mentioned like the seed stage, and then when you want to grow and perhaps also internationalize. And I think here we have a similarity that Switzerland and Israel by itself are not very large markets. What do the Israeli startups do? Where do they go? And will they still create jobs in Israel, or will, when a startup grow, those jobs be created in the US or wherever?
Well, there's a global market nowadays. I mean, I think the manpower that works in high-tech industry in Israel is more than 10% of the workforce of the country. And they create about 40% of our export. Now, there was a trend in the past that, you know, the goal of a startup company was eventually to sell to a big, to a multinational. But this has been changing. And now it's a much more mature area or mature infrastructure in Israel of the high tech, and more bigger companies, Israeli bigger companies, turn to be multinationals themselves. So the early stage, right? I mean, companies had to sell, and this is what they were thinking about. And I mean, in Corona times, it is a little bit different, because the pace was many folds quicker. You know, there was a lot of money flowing in to very early stage companies. The process was accelerated, I mean, from phase one to phase two, etc., etc. And then they were bought with a lot of money, and sometimes it's maybe too early. But in general, I think that the Israeli market or Israeli infrastructure is much more mature now than it used to be.
Mm-hmm. And following that train of thought, Jacob, we discussed earlier before we started our podcast that yes, the pace and the innovation in the startup field, in the tech area, specifically digit, virtual reality, in artificial intelligence, has been very, very high. But yet also the traditional industry, the classical, and it's where I'm coming from, classical industrial, let's say, company, which is also necessary to produce goods that you need in on a daily basis, whether that's consumer goods or investment goods, has its role. And I have to say, we do also have that challenge as a classical business to remain innovative, not as a startup, but the classical industrial company has to fight hard, to be agile, to be flexible, to foster curiosity, not only amongst children, but of course our employees and so forth. So just drilling down a little bit more, what is the situation now with the mix of companies that you have in Israel? I mean, here in Switzerland, we have a very, the classical mid-sized company, Mittelstand, KMU, as we call it, between 50 and 300, 400 employees. That's the backbone of our economy. Is that comparable to Israel, or do you have a bit of different distribution? I think you have state-owned companies as well.
We have state-owned companies. You can call them traditional, mm-hmm. but it's always a mix of traditional and innovative. If you take, for example, companies like the Israeli Aircraft and Space Industries, I mean, it's one of the largest. It's governmental owned at the end of the day, but it's very innovative. I mean, it's also with a lot of high-tech components, not only traditional industry.
And how is that? Why are they in? We also have a company here called Ruag, but they are more in the headline because it doesn't really function very well in that company. So if you have Israel Ruag, what are they doing better?
I will talk about the Israeli one because I don't know so much about how your company works. The Israeli company, as I said before, I think in the beginning or a bit after the beginning, that the necessity is the mother of invention. We have to provide ourselves with all kinds of developed technologies and industries that our own country actually produces and consumes. So we have to be very innovative in this regard. Otherwise, we cannot compete if we are not so innovative. And I think that we managed to do it quite well. One thing that suffered very, very hard during the time of Corona was the small businesses. You know, the family businesses, the small businesses.
It's the same. I think it's unfortunately the case. Yeah.
But in the traditional industry, I think, as we spoke before, I think there is a kind of equilibrium when money is starting to flow again to those kind of companies.
Perhaps when we look into the future, what do you think are the challenges for the startup ecosystem? And if I may ask, the current conflict you have in your region, do you think this is also a challenge that the ecosystem is facing?
You know, always this kind of conflict is a challenge and opportunity. I mean, we have a lot of opportunities in our area. We just signed agreements with a few Arab countries in the Gulf and Morocco and others. And if we continue this trend, it will create opportunities also with our immediate neighbors, the Palestinians. So we hope that the trend will continue. And if you ask me about the challenges in economy or in innovation or in the high-tech industry, I think we have quite heavy challenges because of the COVID-19. I mean, a lot of the money, governmental money, was spent. I mean, we have now a huge deficit, like many countries suffer from a huge deficit. So to continue to give, for example, we spend 4.5% of our GDP on R&D, which is maybe the highest in the world.
That's incredible. Mm-hmm.
I think we are leading even South Korea in this regard. So to continue doing it with the deficit, to continue assisting the academic institutions with the same rate of assistance that they need. Now, a lot of money, as I said, was spent on high tech, on other industries. But we have to create a lot of jobs and to bring a lot of skilled people.
What is the unemployment rate currently?
It in the height of Corona, I think it was 20%.
In Israel.
In Israel, before Corona, it was about 4%. Now it went down to around 9%, and it's going down. Now there are a lot of need for working hands in Israel. But we have one very big challenge that we have is to bring two communities into the workforce. This is the ultra-Orthodox Jewish men and the Arab, especially Muslim, women into the workforce. It's a large part of the society, and if they will contribute to the economy, it will be a wonderful... this is one of the challenges of our new government.
I do have a question in that regard, raising a bit the gender aspect. You have in the Israel military both men and women doing service at the same time. I advocate that for the Swiss army as well. I've done active military service as an officer, and I never really understood why we don't have more women in the army. But now in society, is that the same? What is the ratio of women working in Israel? Can you tap into that source as well? Because in Switzerland, it's still relatively low, and in Israel, is it maybe
quite high?
Yeah,
it's quite high.
Do you have a percentage then?
I think it's about 50% of the workforce.
Okay.
I guess. You know, I will take my ministry as an example. Mm-hmm. When I entered the ministry, we hardly had any women ambassador. Now it's about 50, it's going to 50%. I will be replaced by a lady.
That would have been my question.
And first time in Switzerland to have an
really?
Israeli lady ambassador.
Wonderful.
Which is really, really a good thing. But still, I have to say, we have a lot of work to do in this regard. I mean, the salaries are most of the time not equal. Mm-hmm. We have to work on that a lot. I think in Switzerland is the same. You have the same problem. I think we have to bring many more women to politics. I mean, now we have more minister women than we used to, but it's still not enough. Yeah.
And in terms of childcare, you have kindergarten and Kinderhort and this kind of facilities. Yeah.
But I have to say that maybe it's not in a very young age, maybe it's not as expensive as Switzerland, but it's quite expensive for a young couple to bring up children in before 3 years old, for example.
Well, I think we should slowly come to the wrap-up. Andri, just going into the final round.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Ambassador. I wrote down 3 points that were really new to me. So the first one is that you have 10% of your jobs in high tech and 40% export of your technology goods. And when I compare it to Switzerland, I think we have about 40-50% in pharmaceutical export. So what we have in pharmaceutical, you have in tech. And I think when we say tech is the future, we Switzerland probably should also invest more in our tech sector to have more tech exports as well. So this is something I learned. The second thing is the governmental role. I mean, I knew that your military has an important role, but that you spend 4 to 5% of your GDP in innovation is quite a lot. And the last thing is the mindset of your people, that they are open to new technology and open to change. And I think this is something we need, and this is something we in Switzerland can also be better and enhance, because I think the future will happen. The question is just where it will happen, and we hope that it will also happen in Switzerland. So those are my three key takeaways I take from this discussion.
Thank you. I'm very happy about it, because it creates a lot of ground for cooperation between our two countries. You know, on commercial basis, and we, I think, during the last few years, we really have a recognition of some of the leading Swiss companies about the Israeli innovation, and they create a lot of collaboration with Israeli companies, be it Migros or SBB or Swiss Post or ABB and Swisscom and many others. And they, even as Bebe, I think they opened an office in Israel, and they recognize this this trend, and that we can learn from each other, and we can collaborate much more than now.
Absolutely, and I think this collaboration goes back quite a while. I mean, when I was in the military, we had, for instance, a 3D set up for maneuver exercises, and that was developed by the Israeli army, and it was taken over by Switzerland. I think we were buying the drones from Israel, etc. But out of the military, I really am happy to hear that InnoSwiss, that's one of my takeaways, Jacob, has this cooperation with your, let's say, innovation bureau or organization, yes. That's a promising sign, and the continuation of this cooperation and collaboration of both countries, which have certain things in common that we do not have in common. It's another takeaway that you're a very young country, and have a mix of old and young, going back to the Talmud, and even that can be looked as a innovation, or let's say a Socratic way of looking at things in a different way. So that has a strong aspect, I think, and the curiosity that the children bring along, and fostering that curiosity amongst children. I think this was my opening question to you, actually. For me personally, that the children are our future, and if we can enhance that also under in Switzerland, and help with our educational system just a little bit to enhance that curiosity, then hopefully we will have a bit more, even more innovation in Switzerland as well. So thank you very, very much. We
thank
wish you.
You
all the best for your final weeks here in Switzerland. Thank you for everything you did, and we will be happy to getting to know your successor in due time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and thank you for inviting me again to be with you in this very important, I think, discussion.
Thank you. Pleasure. Thank you.